And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. It is Thursday and it's the 13th of March. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. And we're really pleased to have you listening to the show. And hopefully we'll not leave you disappointed. We've got loads to talk about over the next 3 hours. We're going to be covering all the major issues and conversations of the day. We're going to be covering the issues that are important to you here right across the Northwest. And we want your views. That's the key to this as well. 07491 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Maybe there's an issue we believe you believe we should be talking about, or just something that you want to pass on. This is not going well, is it, speaking? 07491 25000 if you want to give us a call. Caroline Orr, our researcher and producer, taking your calls, assisted by Shannon as well. And you can email comments@highlandradio.com. And tomorrow, we're all excited, as I mentioned to Lee there, it's our big 35th birthday open day here at Highland Radio. The doors are flung open. We're inviting you to come up, if you want to, by the way, and have a chat, meet the staff here, maybe get some pictures if you wanted to. That's completely up to you. Have a cup of tea, have a cup of coffee and some dray bakes. And also we have loads of musical entertainment and great conversational guests throughout the course of the programming, not least on this show. I'll tell you more about that a little later on. Don't forget, you can watch the program, as always, on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. You can watch on your mobile device, but also on your smart TV or Fire Stick. That has the YouTube app on it. And we're on Facebook, Highland Radio News and Sport, Highland Radio Hub, and on the X platform as well, which we have quite a big viewership on X, believe it or not, which is quite pleasing. Let's look at the papers today. And one of the lead stories in the Tyrconnell Tribune, an already heavily congested traffic route from the Ballyrain roundabout to the Polestar Junction in Letterkenny will be made a lot worse if a proposed cycleway is allowed to be constructed. That was the warning from Councillor Kieran Brogan during Tuesday's municipal district meeting, where he said that plans now approved for the cycleway in front of the Mount Ergel Hotel were not there when it went through the statutory period of public consultation. This is something you mentioned on this show previously, and now, of course, has reiterated it at the council meeting. When the new design with cycle lanes come to light last summer, the proposal was met with a sense of bewilderment by the public and among the business community. Councillor Brogan said it was something that should not have happened, and he raised the matter directly with the council, along with his own concerns over the impact that it would have on traffic flow in the area of the town. He highlighted the matter again on Tuesday, and the council has committed to revisit his concerns. So the plans have been approved for a cycleway from the mini roundabout at the old creamery to the Polestar. Councillor Brogan has expressed serious concerns over plans to reduce the section outside the Mount Ergel Hotel to two lanes. So whether you're from Letterkenny or not, you'll know the road we're talking about there, wouldn't you? From Remelton towards the Polestar roundabout outside the Mount Ergel Hotel. There's three lanes there currently. You know, you can turn right into the Mount Ergel going out the way. If you're coming in the way, maybe you're going into the shops that are there. The names escape me at the moment. Screwfix, etc., right? So there's three lanes there currently at the moment. They're going to reduce that down to two under these proposals to accommodate a cycle lane. And there is obviously then going to be created, one would imagine, a natural bottleneck. I'm not sure the lights can be adjusted to account for that. But anyway, the council says they will revisit that. I just wanted to mention, actually, it's also pictured on the front of the paper, and that is Councillor Michael McClafferty. And there's a picture of him and his lovely mother, Bridie McClafferty of Fanmore Falcarra. Now, unfortunately, Michael lost his mum, and it's lovely to see a picture of him and his mum on the front of the paper, and we express our condolences to Michael and everyone affected, the family and friends in the community, by the loss of his lovely mum, Bridie Oney McClafferty. On to the Derry news this morning, and Donegal coroner Dr. Dennis McCauley has said he believes lockdown during the COVID-19 pandemic continues to have psychological effects on many people. The Stranraer GP was making his comments at this month's, as this month marks 5 years since the outbreak of the pandemic. Dr. McCauley praised the success of the vaccination programme, but said the impact of long COVID can be seen in the psychological aftermath. that lockdown had and continues to have on many people. I just wonder, are many of you out there, do you feel that your life has been negatively impacted by that? Do you still feel the negative effects of the lockdown, be it in how you feel, how you socialise, maybe it's in your children? I know there's an awful lot of conversation about that, but I'd just be really curious to hear from you, regular folk like myself, as to how it has affected you, and if you do actually still feel the impacts of the lockdown on you and your family. Give us a text or WhatsApp if you're comfortable to do so, 086 60 25,000, because as I say, we hear an awful lot of people talking about it, but I don't hear an awful lot of members of the public talking about it. We were really quite lucky, maybe it's just how I approach things. You know, if you face adversity in your life and loss and that type of thing, I think you sometimes have to try and adjust, and then other things don't maybe have the same impact on you as they might others. I worked throughout it. I was coming into work every single day, so I was out of the house. We made a thing of the shopping almost being like days out and what have you. I was lucky in that it afforded me more time to spend with my father, who passed away during COVID, and my sister as well. So to some extent, it hasn't, well, not to actually some extent, to a great extent, it didn't affect me negatively, if that makes sense. And thankfully, the boys too, the older boys, weren't massive for going out and stuff as well, and still were able to socialise with their friends through PlayStations and all that kind of stuff. So we kind of, I think we did, sometimes maybe you don't realise it, but I think we got through it kind of okay and out the other side, and it feels to me like just a blip of a memory, really. But according to Dr. McCauley and others, it has had and continues to have a very negative impact on people, on their health psychologically. So if that's you and you feel like sharing, as I say, give us a WhatsApp or text 086 60 25,000. Or if the opposite is true as well, maybe you're similar to me in how you approached it with your attitude. The Derry News this morning: numerous domiciliary care users and their families have contacted the Derry News following major changes in provision in Derry Cityside. Introduced by the Western Health and Social Care Trust, the changes came into effect on Monday morning and have caused widespread distress for service users, families and carers. You can read much more from Catherine McGinty and those affected by that in that paper today. Right, so Micheál Martin headed over to America. He brought a bowl of shamrock, and he met with J.D. Vance and he met with Donald Trump. I had expressed on a number of occasions in advance of this that I thought that this would be used as an opportunity to give Ireland and the EU a good kicking, if you know what I mean. Because it's a very intimidating scenario. We're looking on at the two men sitting in their chairs. They're looking out at dozens and dozens of press, you know, with gotcha questions, looking for the headlines. You've seen exactly how they used questionings to agitate the situation between Trump and Zelensky. With all that being said, Micheál Martin did good. He handled it very well. I know some people are analysing his body language at certain times, but he's dealing with Donald Trump here, and you don't often go into the Oval Office and come out the better for it. And I think, in fairness to Micheál Martin, whether you support him or not, and the same with Donald Trump, whether you support him or not, it is better for us as a nation that Ireland and America don't enter into some sort of aggro. So with all that taken into consideration, I would rate it as a successful trip for Micheál Martin. As I say, people can analyze some of his body language when issues like housing was being talked about. Okay, and maybe people might feel I'm being a bit going a bit soft on it, but I don't. I think, you know, even if you maybe don't support Micheál Martin, just park that for a second and say, look, he's come out of it. There's no major headlines. It wasn't really covered in the US press. Donald Trump says he doesn't want to harm Ireland. We don't need the aggro. And I would say, job done, the same as the front of the Irish Daily Mail. I'll read what their opinion of it is. Micheál Martin parried vague threats to Ireland by Donald Trump over a trade imbalance, corporation tax and the pharmaceutical industry during a rambling 50-minute Oval Office press conference yesterday. Government sources said they were happy with how the potentially explosive meeting went, and Mr. Martin later invited the US president to visit Ireland. Speaking at the Friends of Ireland luncheon, the Taoiseach said, and we'll go to page six, We hope to welcome President Trump back to Ireland soon. President Trump, thank you for joining us today to mark our National Day. You are a great friend of Ireland, Mr. Martin said in the US Capitol. I know there is one small corner in the west of Ireland, a beautiful and remote park called Doombeg, County Clare, which holds a very special place in your heart. And we hope to welcome you back to our small island and indeed to these particular Greens very soon. Interestingly, President Trump declared that Conor McGregor was one of his favourite Irish people. I do happen to like your fighter. He's got the best tattoos I've ever seen, Mr. Trump said. This is, of course, despite his civil case against him, accused of raping a woman. It was also referenced to Rosie O'Donnell. Donald Trump doesn't like her, and he mentioned that she's moved to Ireland, and I think Micheál Martin was a bit like, what? Who's that? Which most people would be, but Donald Trump's at... had issues with that lady for quite some time. But geopolitically, and again, you know, there was a time when you got papers out and, you know, there was a lot of local national, you know, a lot of local national news in them. There's certainly lots in the local papers. But even the nationals now, if you get the Irish Times and you go past the third, you know, the first two or three pages, you might find one or two Irish stories. And after that, it's all international. I don't know if they pay the press agency for it or what have you, but there's not an awful lot of Irish news coverage in the papers. So that's why I'm focusing a bit on some of the geopolitical stuff, which affects us all. And of course, we were mentioning that Donald Trump, whilst his meeting with Micheál Martin was cordial and no great harm caused to Ireland as a result of it, he did use that press conference to have a pop at the EU, and the EU and the US are in a trades war. The European Union will impose tariffs on more than €20 billion worth of US goods from next month, hitting back against unjustified tariffs introduced by the US and ratcheting up a dispute many fear will escalate into a major trade war. The move by US President Donald Trump to levy imports of steel and aluminium took effect yesterday, drawing retaliatory measures from Europe. The European Commission, the EU's executive body responsible for trade policy, announced it would be hitting billions worth of US goods with its own tariffs, which are effectively a tax on importers in the coming weeks, which effectively is a tax on you. Again, I ain't getting too excited about all of this. There's a lot of posturing. We've seen in a situation where Donald Trump raised massive taxes on Canada in the morning. He reduced them in the afternoon. I think Canada made some concessions about the providing electricity into part of the United States. It'll all be sorted. It will all be sorted. Hopefully, it'll be sorted on the eastern outskirts of Europe, because you would know that the Ukrainians have accepted a peace plan, a 30-day ceasefire peace plan that was put forward by the Americans. It's now at the table of the Russians, and tactically, again, it's really quite good, right? Because Donald Trump has been cozying up, some would say, to Putin, but he's agreed this deal with Ukraine. He's lifted the stay on arms and information and put this on the table of Vladimir Putin. So it's very much painted Putin into a corner. Does he want peace? Does he want war? From a negotiation diplomatic point of view, if you don't go into the ins and outs, it is not bad tactics. But anyway, the Kremlin said yesterday it was awaiting details from Washington about a proposal for a 30-day ceasefire in Ukraine before responding, while U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio hoped a deal would be struck within days. On Tuesday, as I mentioned, the U.S. agreed to resume weapons, supplies and intelligence sharing after Kyiv said at talks in Saudi Arabia that it was ready to support a ceasefire proposal. The Kremlin said it was carefully studying the results of that meeting and awaiting details from Mr. Rubio and White House National Security Advisor Mike Waltz. Later in the day, the White House said Mr. Waltz had spoken with his Russian counterparts, and there's a team of Americans heading over to Russia. Right, okay. That's us all up to date in that stuff. The Irish Farmers Journal this morning: factories continue to scramble for cattle supplies, with agents scouring the country looking for factory-fit cattle. This week's beef trade rose another 10 cent a kilogram, driven by tight supplies and insatiable demand for Irish beef in the UK market. Bullocks are starting on a base price of €6.90 to €7 a kilogram, with heifers starting at 7 euro to 720 a kg. Huge numbers of cattle are now being bought at flat prices, with 750, 760 a kilogram now on the table for Aberdeen Angus bullocks and heifers. That's an increase of 140 to 150 a kilogram, or 500 euro ahead since the first week in January. So if you have them, well done. You're going to get good prices, I suppose. The Irish Daily Star tells us that a cargo ship captain arrested after the North Sea tanker crash in Russia, is a Russian national. UK police are holding the 59-year-old on suspicion of gross negligence manslaughter after one of his crew on the MV Salong was missing, presumed dead. The Portuguese vessel and the anchored MV Stena Immaculate, carrying 220,000 barrels of jet fuel for the US military, crashed 13 miles off the East Yorkshire coast on Monday, sparking a massive fire. Now, the Marine Accident Investigation Board in Grimsby was questioning the Salong crew, including Russians and Filipinos, about the collision. The crew of the Immaculate were due to give US officials their version of events, but it turns out that the captain had failed safety checks in Dublin. And lastly, they want to control your social media posts. It's in the Irish Sun. A new government strategy to crack down on disinformation on social media is set to be published in the coming weeks. The last government created a new online safety code for social media and internet companies. It's aimed to force them to do more to protect children and prevent them from seeing harmful content. I think we'd all agree on that. That is very possible. For these companies to protect kids. They need to do that, but they're not doing it. Alongside this, a working group was set up to develop a national strategy to counter the rise of disinformation online. That's a little bit more concerning. What is disinformation? Who determines what is true and what is not true? That is a problem for many people. They recently delivered the new disinformation strategy to Communications Minister Patrick O'Donovan, who confirmed it won't impinge on the freedom of speech. But then again, who determines what is, you know, freedom of expression and so on and so forth? Right. That is a run through of some of the papers. If there's anything there you wish to comment on, 07491 25000. We're going to be talking about new guidelines which might have an impact on those who have green fingers. Stay with us. Paul McLaughlin is going to be joining us to discuss that very shortly. Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballacter Garden Centre, joins us now. Paul, we're not in the garden as such, right? Mm-hmm. Are we far from being in the garden?
Not particularly. The traditional start of the gardening season was St Patrick's Day, so we're not a million miles away altogether.
So we could be seeing more of you chatting about gardens.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. You see at the minute there, you see the thorns are starting to bloom in the hedges and stuff like that. So things are definitely on the rise, hopefully.
I've not seen as many daffodils about. No, is that because people aren't putting them down?
They're a wee bit slow this year, but now they are coming.
Sometimes they're up in January and you're like,
yes,
what?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, cut yourself on, daffodils.
Yes, it depends on the mildness, I suppose, of period past. You know?
Right, okay. I suppose, too, a lot of people coming into the spring, and this isn't why we invited you in, we're going to talk about something else, but a lot of people are still counting the cost of Storm Owen, I would imagine, and will be as they head into the spring in terms of, you know, hedges down, trees down. I don't know. We had a couple of trees down, took an entire fence down. Real pain in the neck. And yes, it wasn't my tree either, which is extra hurtful.
Yes, that's always a problem, all right. But no, the storm has had a huge toll on gardens around the place. Mm. There's a lot of people who've lost, like, greenhouses, poly tunnels.
Yeah.
People who'd been to growing veg, that kind of crack. So they're a bit of rebuilding going on. But even sort of people's gardens, like, they've lost a lot of maybe trees that have been there for their lifetime, if you know what I mean.
Yes,
so
yeah.
It's sort of, it's kind of a new opportunity to sort of redesign that. But obviously there's a lot of pain involved in losing a tree that sort of meant a lot to you.
And getting rid of a tree is a 500 or 600 euro job if you're lucky, you know, a felled tree, right. You know, if it's a biggie.
Yes, no,
there's
absolutely
a lot of expense to it as well.
I know,
and
like,
whatever it takes with it on its way down.
Pretty much, some of the big trees, it could be nearly a week's work involved in actually getting rid of them and everything.
And it's expert work.
Yes, oh, absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
You can't mess around. I mean, there's a lot of availability of chainsaws now, but I used one once and it bounced back at me.
Yes.
And I left it back and that was the end of my relationship with chainsaws.
No, you have to have a lot of respect for them. So 100%. You do, because they're great tools.
So much talk, like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Right, so what is the story about guidelines incoming and who's it going to affect? Landowners and gardeners, I have in my brief notes here. What are these guidelines?
Basically, back in July 2024, the government signed in laws, the Invasive Alien Species Act, which sort of, they're tightening up the laws on sort of plants and animals coming in that are non-native to the area who are deemed to be harmful to the local biodiversity. Basically, what the Irish government is doing, they were lagging behind. This came in the EU in 2014, and Ireland never actually implemented it, but they have done now.
So, say, for instance, it might sound like a silly analogy, but, you know, sometimes on one of those channels high up on Sky, you'll see Border Patrol or something. And it seems like in Australia and New Zealand, you know, it's a big no-no to bring seeds in, to bring, you know, even dried dead animals or what have you.
Yeah.
Because they want to maintain, you know, they don't want to bring anything invasive in, and they don't want to bring anything that could damage the native stuff.
Yes.
Is that the kind of stuff we're talking about on a scale?
Yes, that's exactly the sort of stuff we're talking about. All right. There are animals involved, but immediately at the minute, there's a lot seem to be including plants more so. Plants, probably the most common plants would be the likes of the dreaded Japanese knotweed. Came in like 100 years ago. The giant gunnera came in the 90s, which is the big massive rhubarb you see along the road there. And the rhododendron ponticum has been about since the 1700s. But it's just all these plants are deemed to be harming the natural biodiversity and killing off native plants.
Smothering or taking the real estate that your traditional Irish greenery would live.
A lot of the plants like the gunnera or like the rhododendron, they're leaves totally block out the light under them. So native plants can't actually flourish under them, so that's mainly where the problem lies.
So how do they catch who is a gardener or a landowner to sort of impose these guidelines?
That seems to be where that from my looking at it, that seems to be the problem.
Yeah, seems to be the flaw in it for me as well.
Yes, but to be honest, I think actually the more I've read up on a wee bit on this in the last few days there, it seems to be connected to the National Biodiversity Plan, which goes from 2023 to 2030. And I think the government are trying to join up their own agencies. Like previously, the Rivers Agency looked after their bit, National Parks looked after their bit, and councils looked after their bit. But I think now there seems to be a plan involved to bring all these together along with. So this the introduction of these laws seems to me to be sort of an opportunity for education almost.
Yeah,
highlight the issue more so.
But that being said, the state has a list of farmers. There's a lot of farmers receiving payment. The state has an awful lot of information on their property, right? Do you anticipate that they might be the low-hanging fruit here?
That would be my fear. Actually, there's a tradition of this in terms of back in the 1936, they brought in the Noxious Weeds Act, which meant I'm sure people are familiar with benweeds or ragwort, you know, the yellow
stuff. I've heard stories of guards in people's fields.
Yes,
back in the day.
My father would have told me that it's like the guards used to be, and it used to be sort of almost a point of shame that the guards landed to tell you to cut your benweeds.
Yeah,
but like.
No, I don't think the guards are going to be doing it this time round.
Possibly not. However, as recently as 2020. The actual department did cut people's farm payments for benweed. 20 farmers got done in 2020. To actually, the farm payments reduced.
Wow.
So I would fear that in this case, maybe the farmers would be the low-hanging fruit. To be able
Rhododendron?
Yes.
Are they potentially the big problem for farmers then?
Rhododendron are a big problem. Sort of if you go down, sort of, obviously in the region, Glenveagh is always famous for the rhododendron.
Yeah.
And it has escaped from Glenveagh basically. So it's covered in a lot of area and just in general Terman Creasel area down there. Huge problem. I don't know figures for Glenveagh, but Killarney National Park in the last 5 years has spent 2.7 million trying to get rid of the rhododendrons. Not even scratching the surface.
And it's not an easy plant to get rid of, is it?
No.
So if farmers were told, right, you have to reduce the amount of rhododendrons on your farms or it could affect your payments or eliminate it, it's going to be costly and it's going to take time.
It's going to be costly, surely. Rhododendron, each branch in a rhododendron can actually produce 7,000 seeds. And disperse them over 100 metres.
Yeah.
So it creates a huge amount of problems around them. But it really is just a matter of sort of a year-long process or a couple of years and actually just trim them back and sort of use weed killers then to try and kill off the roots.
And do we know, Paul, is this potentially coming down the line or, you know, was the Department of Agriculture already engaging with the farming community on this? Or
I'm not sure about the farming community. Like, in terms of stuff, part of these laws concern stuff coming into the country, coming into the country. And Department of Agriculture, us as a garden centre down here, they would keep a very tight...
Right, so what are you importing? And if you had a particular reason for wanting to grow a certain particular thing, you might require a particular permit for it. That's how they're controlling it really
pretty much. But even down the garden centre, we're subject to about 6 weekly inspections.
We
come in and actually look through your plants. It's for plant health and for thing, and you have to have all the paperwork to back up where they're like an animal now or a passport. Every plant is a passport and they're all traceable.
What?
Every plant is a passport.
No,
like
it doesn't.
Like a person. Yes, it does. Like
every plant?
Yes. Every plant's supposed to have a passport that you sell out. So the passport is
of all sizes. So say I've got little potting plants, right?
If you buy one thing, a lot of times printed on the pot.
Right, okay.
It's just in the last 5 years it's really come in. But then if there's a problem with that plant, you're supposed to be able to go back to me, and I'm supposed to go back to who I bought it off, and then he's supposed to go back to whoever grew it in the first place.
Okay.
To trace it back to where the outbreak of this particular disease may.
Right, that's okay. So it is about tracking disease as such, right? Because, I mean, obviously, you know, you could depot your plant and you don't have the knowledge of the passport number any longer.
Yes.
So, but that's what they're trying to achieve, yes, whether it's possible or not.
Exactly. But basically, it's not so much if we sell them at retail to the public that are not that traceable, whereas if we pass them on to, say, the council, or if we pass them on to farmers, they have to go away a passport so they can come back through the chain of where they come out of.
All right, but there is definitely now a move to catch up with Europe and elsewhere in terms of protecting, you know, our native biodiversity.
Yeah.
And as you say, it's like a lot of things, you know, maybe introducing helmet wearing on quads, reducing speed limits. It's not always necessarily about enforcement or how many people will. It's about changing a mindset.
Yes.
Right? I know people don't want to hear that, right? But that's the truth. So a lot of people go, oh, reducing the speed limits is pointless. But there's a lot of people that will just, going forward, stick to the speed limits. And those who are inclined to speed will. So I think this is about getting this conversation out there as much as
I think it's about
massive
education.
Crackdowns.
I think it's about education as much as anything else. So it is to get people aware of the problem and maybe be a bit more proactive in terms of dealing with it.
Because
whenever I first looked at this a few nights ago, the rhododendron ponticum that is actually banned Europe-wide, first thing I did whenever I Googled it, one's come up for sale.
Wow.
There's still obviously an ongoing problem, more so than I thought it was.
Yeah, so at the very least, that shouldn't be happening.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe this will be form part of that. Are we doing anything in the garden at the moment, other than tidying up, raking maybe? I don't know.
Tidying up, digging over in a lot of cases. Anybody sort of into veg there, a lot of people have even started their tomatoes inside the house just to bring them on the seedlings that way. St. Patrick's Day is traditional day for putting in your potatoes.
That's right. So I can't believe that's come around again so quick. Not that I put them in, but I know people that do, and it seems like no time that they were doing that before. Yeah. It all depends on how hard the ground is, of course.
Yes, that's it. So now, in fairness, it's actually been dry for the last couple of weeks, so the ground is actually, it's amazing the difference in the ground.
Yeah, it's kind of mild too. I mean, nighttime temperatures are still low, but, you know, 7 to 10 during the day, mostly dry, a bit of moisture, that's the way it's going to be for the next week. All right, listen, Paul, anything else on that? You know way more about this than I. Is there any important points of that conversation I've missed as it relates to these changes?
It seems to be the thing is, well, from my point of view, for the importation and sale of plants, whereas for the ordinary householder, it's going to come down to knowingly allowing the spread of it can lead you into problems. So I would say, obviously, just if you are aware that you have an outbreak, maybe take action, or maybe even seek professional advice, because there are contractors out there who can remove such things or even get you a plan in terms of how to deal with them.
Right, and it's another layer of probably paperwork and bureaucracy, which eventually might have to trickle down to the consumer as well.
Quite possibly, all right.
In terms of cost and what have you. All right, Paul, when's the... you and Caroline sort this out, but when do you think we'll be chatting about gardening?
You just started with the start of April, around that sort of...
Okay, cool.
Around that sort of period.
Right, so we're in March, that's not far away. Are we going to get a good summer? Are you seeing anything in your seeds? Are you seeing anything on your...
I haven't seen anything particular.
Has the sun met the wind?
I haven't seen anything particularly now, but... Funny, me and my beliefs there, you were chatting, I heard you chatting yesterday to the leek guy about the sticks.
Yes.
For leeks. Get me two brass rods and I'll get you a drain. So,
why? How?
I don't know.
Quite honest. Is it to do with you or the rods?
I don't know. Tell you, it was years ago, I was actually working with buying a digger and he got out his brass rods and he went and he found the drain, just like that.
Yeah.
And I says, how do you do that? Like, what's the thing? He says, just don't think about it, just do it. Don't think you can, anything else, just do it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's trying to believe something that's not even there. I mean, presumably, you know, magnetism stuff. Do you know what I mean? The pull of the earth, gaps in the earth, water, how it... you know what I mean? It's not... Mm-hmm. Like, I presume there probably is a science to it.
Yes, I think it's to do with, like, the brass rods, things to do with the water flowing. As much as anything else, you'll find where it's moving. If it was standing still, you probably wouldn't, if you know what I mean.
All right, okay.
I don't know how it works, anything else, but it seems to be a thing.
Okay, so if you need... What can you find with your brass rods?
Drains.
If you need, if you need a drain found. Yeah. And he has spare time, which I doubt.
No.
Paul McLaughlin is your man. All right, listen, Paul, thanks very much for that. I really do appreciate it. And look forward to us kicking off the crack in April. OK, I'm going to talk to Stuart in a moment, but first I have to take this quick break. OK, so we've been reflecting a little on Micheál Martin's meeting yesterday with Donald Trump, and prior to that, J.D. Vance. The general perception or reflection in the papers today is that it went all right. Stuart, what's your view? Good morning to you.
Yeah, it went all right. It went to the script. I would say it's scripted this last 6 months because there was no mention of anything. He keeps saying that he speaks for the people of Ireland. He hasn't a clue. He doesn't. Like, they keep saying that this is good for Ireland and this is for Ireland. And even the Taoiseach mentioned about the building and houses that we can't keep up to it. Like, and he's, that's because how successful a country we are, supposedly. But I'm very disappointed that he didn't bring up Gaza. I would say he was probably told beforehand that if you bring it up, you'll be put out the front door. Mm. I mean, he never highlighted anything. I mean, there's what, 12 days there now with any food going on, and the borders are closed. And our press hasn't mentioned it. Like BBC, RTE, CNN, all these big stations, they're all just sitting behind a curtain. They're not allowed to speak.
It really is quite remarkable at this day and age, and you'd wonder why, that cutting off food supplies and cutting off electricity into that area, especially given...
Even water.
I beg your pardon, you're right, Stuart. It really is remarkable that it is now either being buried or... That impact on regular people's lives is so insignificant that it gets very
into
media coverage.
Ukraine and Russia. I mean, there's definitely a split here in people's colour. If you're a white European, I mean, it's pure. It's as if these people are, and the way they talk about them as dogs, and they talk about them as animals, and they talk about them. There's a name they have that's even lower than that. That the Zionists use for these people. It's not. I mean, it wouldn't happen in any other country in South America, North America. It just wouldn't be allowed to happen. And in the British Parliament yesterday, Keir Starmer stood up and he said, "Oh, it was terrible what was happening." Quite. And then they signed an agreement for sending more parts for F-16 bombers. Like,
there has to be a international perception that the lives of non-Hamas innocent Palestinians are worth less than Ukrainians, they're worth less than North Americans, they're worth less than Europeans.
They're worth less
Europeans.
Than anybody.
And like, that has to be the case, because as you quite rightly say, if this was Italy, or if this were France, or Portugal, or Spain, or anywhere else really, it would seem, except the Middle East, or in that region of the world, it would be completely unacceptable. But Israel seems to be able to do this and still enjoy great relationships with Britain, with Europe, with America. It really is, it's quite difficult to watch on and see.
I even have my own doubts about our own politicians. I really do, about our own top politicians, because the whole thing about signing this territories bill, they had to change it to put it on hold. They put it on hold. Why did they put it on hold? It took years to get that bill through in the first place, as far as where it is. And then before the elections, they said, we'll sign it. And then when the elections was going on, they said, we're not going to sign it. The whole thing needs re-amended. That could take 2 years to re-amend that bill.
Well, Israel did threaten Ireland over the back of that bill.
Yes, but Israel threatens everybody. It comes all the way down. Even Epstein could be. He was a Mossad or an Israeli intelligence. And like, he was gathering information and photographs and images. And Trump's on that island as well as everybody else. And not just the island. They have been...
Can I just give listeners a bit of background on that? The Epstein files, which catalogue a lot of Epstein's activities and his flights and all that type of stuff, the Trump administration committed to releasing them in their entirety. They were released in drips and drabs to very Trump-friendly bloggers and reporters. It has to be said. That's not controversial. That's a fact. Then it was committed that all of the files would be released. And then the Trump administration then said that some of it would be withheld for national security. And still now, after this big commitment, and the JFK files were the same as well, by the way, all of a sudden now the Epstein files, if released, are going to be very heavily redacted. And there is
speculation
that the reason they're going to be redacted has got nothing to do with national security. It's because of some of the names that are on them. So really, it's kind of a little bit more of the same, just under a different administration in the United States. Have I framed that all right? I think that's...
It's all espionage. And like, how a country, if you walk into the White House now, there's an Israeli flag. And children, they're trying to get children in school now in the morning, as well as saying that they stand for America, they say their national anthem, or they say whatever they do. They have to commit allegiance to Israel as the next thing on the agenda.
But Stuart, people think it's terrible to see collective responsibility imposed on the people of Gaza. You know, all Palestinians effectively, tens of thousands wiped out, more being starved out of it. That people are critical of that, and I think quite rightly so. Obviously, should we be so critical of Israel as a whole because of the actions of Benjamin Netanyahu?
Set up like it's all to do with Zionism.
Everyone is
to do with
there,
the greater
though.
Israel, and they're not going to stop. Like, people don't realize Israel's in Syria at the minute, and they have thousands of troops in Syria. They're in the Lebanon at the minute. They wiped out Assad's regime, everything. And there's no word about it. They went on, like, they blew up every airport and blew up all the planes, so that there was nothing.
They got the okay to prevent.
America would give them the okay to blow up Ireland. They would get the okay, no matter what he says, he's going to get the okay. He keeps pushing his boundaries and pushing his boundaries, and he finds out, oh, that's okay. We'll go another step. We'll see how far we can push them. Mm. And it just seems to me that even in America, if you look back to the black people being freed, to take buses and to vote and all that, it was all down to the campuses in America that they stood up and they refused to go to school until they stopped supporting apartheid and anything to do with apartheid. Now, this is what they're doing again. They're trying to stop anything that's to do with West Bank and everything. And now they've arrested people that are American citizens, telling them they're going to deport them. Deport them where? I don't know, because they're American citizens. And they've told them that they're supporters of Hamas. So they can't arrest them on anything else other than terrorist grounds. Now, these people are protesting peacefully, which is in the United States Constitution, and they're protesting quite rightly, legally, and now they're starting to arrest them and charge them for being members of a terrorist organization thousands of miles away.
All right, but finally, Stuart, and this is the problem I have when countries or individuals or leaders take a moral high ground, because I think you're either on the moral high ground or you're not. And we did take, probably didn't go far enough, but we took a harder stance against Israel than many did. But that being said, there maybe was an opportunity for Micheál Martin to, put a lot of people's concerns about Gaza to Trump. He didn't do that. I understand why he didn't do that, because, as I say, we've got one foot on the moral high ground, because really we're interested in our business and economic relationship with the United States. And, you know, we're a little bit opposed to what they're doing if we're not actually going all in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but he has to speak. Like, the man says that he speaks for the people of Ireland. He absolutely doesn't.
He was elected. He was elected by 40% of the population that bothered to vote. They knew Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael's mandate, and they voted him in.
His party was elected, not him.
But that's how it works.
He wasn't elected.
He was the leader.
I
understand when people sort of try and break democracy down like this, Stuart, but that's the way it is. People who voted for Fianna Fáil knew who the leader was and knew what that party stood for. They knew what Sinn Féin were offering, and they didn't think, right, we don't want to go down that route. We prefer to return Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael to power. That's the will of the people.
Yeah, but they didn't get in on their own. Now, you have to remember, now there's a clatter of independence that have gone back and what they promised their people, and they're in government, but they're in opposition, which never happened as well. We're not going to go down that route at the minute, but okay. I mean, back to the water and the food and that there, like, that should have been mentioned yesterday, and I'm disgusted and appalled that he never put his foot down yesterday. He was terrified. He was just sitting like a wee nodding dog in your car.
I know that's how you frame it, but I mean, at the end of the day, nothing was done to damage Ireland as a whole in terms of its relationships with America. But I take
Trump
your point.
Did say 200. He was going to tax us 200%. Did you hear that?
I did, but he also said he didn't want to do any damage to Ireland, and his issue was mainly with
Ireland. Ireland's nothing to America. Nothing.
Well, that's why we might escape. I get you. Listen, Stuart, good to speak to you. Thank you very much indeed. A caller says, just for your information, Canada still hasn't conceded a thing to Trump's threats. The raising and dropping of tariffs is just him trying to scare them. It's not working, and him backing down again, but he can't back down completely with tariffs or he'd look weak to his base. I generally try not to say something unless I kind of know it to be true. And my understanding is, and in fact, it is a fact, that Ontario's Premier Doug Ford, he suspended a surcharge which was proposed on the province's electricity exports to Michigan, to New York, and to Minnesota. So he, Doug Ford, did roll back himself on the surcharge on power into those three states, those three areas. So as I say, I do try and not say something unless I have a fair idea that it is close to the truth. Trump doesn't like Rosie O'Donnell because of her highlighting the crime of male sexual violence towards women. He likes Conor McGregor because of his attitude towards sexual violence against women. There is a very obvious link here. As the Bible says, by their deeds you shall know them. If Micheál Martin was concerned about the loss of so many young lives in the Russia-Ukraine war, why is he hell-bent on getting rid of the triple lock and potentially sending our soldiers, our children and grandchildren to their deaths in foreign wars? Martin must have two tongues to spout the speech to suit the people he's trying to impress, so some of it must be untrue, says the listener. Why did Micheál Martin not bring up the subject of military jets refueling at Shannon? That would have silenced Trump. Well, I mean, obviously... the delegation went in there. What was going to be discussed was agreed in advance, and it was a case of just passing it off. We just don't live in a day and age anymore where there's just a photo of two people with a bowl of shamrocks and that's it. You know, the public themselves are scrutinising everything, and some of the media are as well. So it's the art, in inverted commas, of diplomacy. Micheál Martin behaved like a leader and a politician, says the listener. Why talk about another country that's got nothing to do with us, while at the stroke of a pen he could put tariffs on every business we have, which could lead to the loss of 50,000 jobs here? And there's much more employed, to 250,000, I believe, in foreign direct investment companies. Micheál Martin did a great job yesterday of playing the game with a leader who is unpredictable. He looked after his own country, which is probably how I framed it at the beginning of the show. But we've got different views here, and we love that because they're always expressed respectfully, and it's good. Everyone's view has a right to be platformed. Okay, back with the weather shortly. Tomorrow we are giving away €9,000. We've got 9 €1,000 cash prizes to give out during the course of tomorrow, kicking off just before 11 and then every hour up until 8 o'clock. Tickets are just a tenner. So if you want to be in 9 draws for €1,000 and enjoying much greater odds than you might winning the same amount of money elsewhere, then you can get your tickets right now. The website, highlandradio.com. You'll see there. It's very safe. It's very secure. And all your details are kept very secure, as you can imagine. So you buy one ticket, you're in all 9 draws. That's it, right? I don't know how many people will buy tickets once the first draw has taken place. So really, if you want to be in all the draws, now is the time. You've got today and a bit of tomorrow, right, to make sure you're in all 9 draws. You can just sit back, relax, and see if your number comes out. You'll have €1,000 in your pocket for the St. Patrick's Day weekend. Now, the nice part of all of this, although that's lovely enough, is that it's all to raise money for 3 great charities. You've heard about it all week. You've seen it on our social media. You may have watched the live between me and Lee Gooch last night. Whatever way you've heard it at this point, we're supporting Huey's Corner, who offer counselling and supports to bereaved children or children who have gone through very difficult things in their lives. They do essential, important work. The BlueStack Special Needs Foundation, working with people of varying abilities to maximise their potential in their life, in their social circles, getting into the workforce, all that kind of stuff. Great, great work they do, dealing with, working with hundreds of people out of Donegal Town primarily. And of course, Donegal Cancer Flights and Services, run by a great group of individuals of the community for the community, helping people get to and from far-reaching cancer treatment programs, Dublin, Galway, etc. They are there for people. And we've had a wonderful response to this all week because, you know what, you're lovely, generous people. And we just want to give it the last couple of pushes. So if you can afford a tenner, and if you would like potentially to win €1,000 and have 9 chances to do so, please get onto our website right now, highlandradio.com, and buy your tickets to make sure that you're in all draws tomorrow. Don't leave till tomorrow morning. Listen, we'll get a lot of people sorted in the morning if that's the way it is. But today is an opportunity to get your ticket. It's just a tenner, 2 cups of coffee or whatever it might be, and you're supporting 3 great charities and potentially winning some lovely cash. Now, if you don't want to use the website for whatever reason, you can give us a call here at the radio station right now, 07491 25,000, and our crew will process your purchase for you, email out the ticket number. There's no answering phone calls. There's no 5 rings. There's none of that malarkey. Your number comes out, and you can be on Timbuktu, and when you get back from Timbuktu, you have your €1,000, okay? Bad phone reception in Timbuktu, I'm told. And also, if you want to do cash, and lots of people calling in, it's great to see them, call up to reception here at Highland Radio and we'll sort you out that way too. So please, if you are inclined to do so, get it done today. Then you're in all 9 draws and your €10 is going to be split amongst those 3 amazing charities. Please be as generous as you can.